from the Hill Country in Texas, broadcasting worldwide, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com.
Okay, here we go. This is hour two of our little show. It is January 10, 2019. Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. We are going to dive in Open Phone Friday tomorrow. And let's move out now to southern England, where Andrew Fletcher, God bless him, Andrew Fletcher. I don't know how long ago, Andrew, good morning, world. It's actually good afternoon there. How long did we, what, has it been since we've talked to you?
Oh, it's been a couple of years, I think.
Four or five, I don't know, been a long time. How you doing there?
Doing okay. They're still banging me up against the brick wall.
Oh, I'm sorry? You're banging what up against the brick wall?
Still banging my head up against the brick wall.
What do you mean? How come you're doing that?
It's just a constant struggle to move this forward.
To move what forward exactly?
The incline bed.
Oh, you see, you're so passionate about this whole thing that you want to get more people to do it.
Yes. But more so to get the medical profession on board. You know, this should be in all of hospitals. It should be in all old people's homes.
Andrew Fletcher, you spent almost your entire life talking about this IBT, incline bed therapy, haven't you?
25 years now.
Wow. And there's a lot of... talk about some of the cultural and the historical uses of this, and how this goes way back, this idea of raising the head of the bed when people sleep.
Yeah, it was the real elephant in the room. In fact, it's still the elephant in the museum rooms. Cairo Museum has an inclined bed visited by millions of people, and it's inclined. You know, it's pulled out of the tombs that were, and it's been buried for 4,000 or 5,000 years. And no one's asking why they incline the beds.
Oh, you mean so back in the pyramids and all that stuff, they actually were...
They were using inclined beds.
No kidding. Okay. How are we doing?
Yeah. And you have two presidents that used an inclined bed. Roosevelt, there's one of his inclined beds is featured in the Little Museum.
How are we doing?
And what was the president that got shot? Glenn, was it? Or
Kennedy?
No, before Kennedy.
Before Kennedy, McKinley, Garfield, Jackson?
Garfield.
Yeah,
it was Garfield. His bed, there's a picture of him looking out of his window, and he's in the last sort of throes of life.
Uh-huh.
And his bed's inclined, looking out of the window.
That's great. We have a lot of new listeners, and you know, people haven't... You know, a lot of people haven't found your show on the archives. Give them the basic story about the benefits of sleeping with your head. What is it? It's a concept is 6 inches, right? Is it 6 inches?
Yeah, we're looking for the five-degree angle. So, again, this depends on the length of your bed.
Yeah.
It's not strictly 5 degrees, but 5 degrees seems to be the optimum for comfort.
Yeah.
You know, so if you go higher, then you've got a trade-off. Because you tend to slide down the bed more.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're introducing shear forces to your skin, so it's best to get the optimum for comfort.
So why do we do it? Why do people do this?
Oh, well, you see, when people look at gravity, they think, oh, gravity's a pulling force, and it pulls us down and holds us onto the Earth's surface. And therefore, gravity acts equally on all objects, fluids, gases, but it doesn't. Gravity acts differently on different densities. Now, a simple example of this is you take a tall beaker of water And then you add some food colouring mixed with salt, add a few drops, and you watch the salt solution, obviously the coloured salt solution, will flow down to the bottom of the glass. But for every action, there must be a reaction. You cannot have the downward flowing liquid without causing a return flow. And indeed, on a massive scale, this is responsible for driving the Atlantic conveyor system. The world's oceans are driven by evaporation, a change in density and gravity. So the wind evaporates from up the northern region and changes the density of the water. The density of the denser water is dragged down to the bottom of the ocean, mm-hmm. which in turn generates a return flow capable of pulling up the warm water from the equatorial region. So it's a simple flow and return system that drives a river bigger than all of the rivers in the world put together under the water.
And so, this same idea is then going on with our body.
Yeah, well, if I explain where I got the idea from, it might be useful. Many years ago, I fitted a back boiler to my living room, and this was on a coal. At the time, it was a gas boiler. So I got to know about a flow and return system. So this works without a pump, and it heats your domestic hot water. It's a system that we had years ago in the UK, whereby the boiler would change the density of the water, causing it to rise.
Yeah.
And then the heat exchanger in the tank, where the hot water would exchange the heat into the cold water system, so changing it to hot water, then that would cool the water down. So that, again, would change the density. So we have a flow and return system driven simply by evaporation and gravity. And that was an interesting lesson which I learned, because that came in useful when I decided to understand how water got to the top of a tree.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd read about osmosis, capillary action, root pressure, and the cohesion tension theory, and literally fell about the floor laughing. I thought it was absolutely ludicrous. You know, the osmosis, for example, water can attract water to the top of a tree. You know, you've got a giant Californian redwood standing over 100 meters tall,
yeah.
No pump involved, pulls gallons and gallons of water every day effortlessly to its leaves. Now, in the case of our density flow and return system, I deduced that the evaporation from the tree's leaves, which is 98% of all the water that comes through the roots, its sole job is to change the density of the sap, because the leaves produce sugars, which are denser than water, and the sap contains nutrients from the soils and salts, which again are denser than water.
Uh-huh.
So losing 98% of all the water at the top of the tree must change the density of the sap by 98%. You can't have one without the other.
All right.
So that gives us a denser solution at the top of the tree than at the bottom of the tree.
Yeah.
So gravity dictates that denser liquid will flow down the tree. Now, for every action, there's a reaction. If you induce a downflow in the tree, you're inducing a return flow, because the water molecules are all attached to each other, and they behave more like string than they do liquids when they're inside enclosed vessels.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can imagine you've got string instead of water around these systems in the tree, and you place a weight at the top of the tree, the whole coil of string will move. Well, the same happens with liquid, because as you change the density of the sap, gravity pulls the sap down, and that behaves like a liquid plunger in a syringe. As that sap is drawn down, it causes a positive pressure in front of it, but applies tension and lowers the pressure behind it. And that lowered pressure and tension is applied to the return flow, which in this case is the xylem. And it not only does it apply to the xylem sap, but also to all of the water molecules in the soil. So the downflow is capable of drawing water into the tree and up through the tree's system, up to the leaves, and back down again.
Yeah.
Now, you'd think that we're going to end up with loads of sugars and salts in the roots with this system, but the tree needs to keep growing as a disposal site to get rid of this excess salts and sugars. So it continues to grow to store it. And any dilute sap, any sap that reaches the roots that's still concentrated, is then re-diluted by incoming water from the soil. So the return flow in the xylem is always less dense than the downflow in the phloem. And that is exactly what happens in a tree. If, you know, if we cut into a phloem vessel, then it, you can see it's a positive pressure. If we cut into a xylem vessel, then the xylem is under is under a tension. And that's why aphids will use the phloem sap to fill themselves up. They'll bore into the phloem. And because the phloem's under positive pressure, the insects are able to feed from it.
Mm-hmm. So this is so, exactly what goes on in the body?
Yes. I quickly realized that this was a non-living physical force. So it would have no respect for which vessel contained it, whether mm-hmm. it was a human being, an animal, an insect, irrespective of the species, this system is going to be working. Now, in the case of the human body, we evaporate water from our lungs. And again, the medical profession have failed to realize that I've got a frog in my throat. If you're boiling water away from the lungs, evaporating water as we breathe out, then that must change the density of the blood that supplies the lungs, because that's where we're extracting the fluids from. So that means that the blood exiting the lungs is always going to be denser than the blood entering the lungs.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're upright, or if we're sitting on an in a chair or on an incline, then gravity can actually play a role in circulation. It can actually draw on these density changes, pulling the denser blood down to the kidneys. Now, the kidneys will do the opposite. We excrete salts in our urine, so the kidneys are filtering out the salts from the urine. So therefore, the blood exiting the kidneys is always less dense, having offloaded the minerals and salts that are spent. So the return flow is always more dilute than the downflow in the arteries. So there'll be a difference in arterial blood and venous blood.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to test this, I thought, well, if there's any credibility in this, then why on earth are we sleeping on a flat bed? Because now that gravity would be running perpendicular to all of the vessels in the body, which run from head to toe. You know, if we were to slice a person in half, we'd see all the vessels are running down from head to toe.
Yeah.
Well, you don't need to do that these days with the internet. You can actually see the physiology on the internet. It just made so much sense that the most upright species is the most intelligent. So,
well, that could be argued.
Yeah. So it all seems to make sense. We tested the theory by simply raising the head of our bed. At the time, 6 inches at the head end, and I achieved the angle by measuring. Well, I had a length of tubing which ran in a loop, which was closed loop, which was filled with water. Coloured salt solution was added to the pillow end of the loop. Hmm. Was stretched out across the bed, raised the bed at the head end. I've actually made a video of this as well to show people on YouTube. When we raised the bed, if we raised the bed, say, 4 inches, then gravity would cause the coloured salt solution to flow down one side of the loop of tubing, but the clear water would run up the same side of the tubing over the top of it, so we could see two-directional flow in one side of the loop of tubing. Not ideal. So I raised the bed a further inch, which was 5 inches, and we got the whole loop to circulate. So we had a downflow representing arterial flow and a return flow representing the venous return, and you could see clearly. And then I added an extra inch because I thought people are going to get this wrong. So, within 4 weeks, my wife's varicose vein went flat. Now, it had been there for 16 years following the birth of our eldest son.
Her varicose veins? Just boom.
Yeah. So here's the medical profession saying, you know, to ease the pressure on your veins, raise your legs. We've done the opposite. We've lowered the legs.
Right.
Raise the upper torso, and it appears to work. And at the same time, a nurse called Stephanie Ness tilted her bed, and she reported back that her veins went flat again in 4 weeks.
Her varicose veins.
To get someone else.
Her varicose veins.
Now, that told us a great deal, Patrick, because what that told us was that the pressure inside the veins that was causing the veins to bulge had now become reduced or indeed turned into a tension and a negative pressure pulling the veins back in. Now, this has implications for edema as well, because edema is caused because the pressure in the veins is greater than the pressure in the surrounding tissue. So fluids seep through the vein walls.
Yeah.
And then the limbs swell. Now, if you've changed the pressure, you've addressed the cause. And indeed, I've seen some horrendous cases of edema, and the recovery has been phenomenal. You know, what one case in particular was my father, who was in a coma in hospital, and we were told he had hours to live. And I fought the doctor's tooth and nail to have his bed tilted. He had multiple organ failure. His kidneys were running brown tar instead of urine. You know, there was no chance of him coming round, according to the medical profession. We tilted his bed. His legs were massive. They were about four times as big as they was before he went into hospital.
Wow.
And they had to cut his pajamas off. My dad had pancreatic cancer, by the way, just to make this clear for everybody listening.
Yeah.
And multiple organ failure. And we were told he had 2 hours to live at best. They tilted his bed. Well, within an hour, we could see clear urine running from his catheter bag.
I'll be there.
And we could see quite a lot of urine being produced. And we watched his legs go down. You know, the swelling was just incredible, seeing the swelling go down. Then he came out of the coma.
I'll be there.
Yeah. My own father came out of a coma, and within a few days, he was walking around the wards telling people all his poems. That's what he wrote poems.
They had given him two hours to live.
Yeah, wow. He came home, and we had an extra 8 months of life.
I'll be done.
That's after being told he'd got 2 hours to, well, we'd been told he'd got 2 hours to live. They agreed to put it, when my dad had come round, they agreed to put a stent in to relieve the pressure from the tumour, which was pressing on his bile duct, which helped. But dad come down and visited us on holiday. He just knocked on the door with his suitcases.
Well, that's a very interesting story. Andrew Fletcher is here, inclined bed therapy. And I just looked, Andrew, we talked to you. Well, it's been 4.5 years ago.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so I've been doing the inclined bed thing for 4.5 years, because I think I did it not long after we talked. I can't believe it's been that long. And I don't know, because people ask me, you say, well, I mean, I feel great. I keep getting healthier, and I'm not going to go back. I really like it. I don't know. But what is it doing exactly? I can't tell you. I mean, how would you know for sure? But
Well, you tend to notice, what we've noticed over the years is that although you still get the bugs, the colds and the flus and occasionally anything that's going around, we tend to fight it off quicker. You know, you have a cold and it's like, what was that all about? And the next morning, you can actually feel relief.
Mm-hmm.
So it's bolstering the immune system for sure. And I mean, we put this to a huge test in Africa with the help of a guy in Botswana, where they tilted a group of patients' beds with full-blown AIDS. And these, again, patients were at the end of life.
Uh-huh.
Skin was grey, pallor. Organs were packing up. Chronic diarrhea. Couldn't stop the diarrhea. And they tilted the bed. The diarrhea stopped. Skin colour went back to a normal colour. They started to get stronger, had a little bit of rehabilitation. And as far as I know, they're still doing fine.
No kidding. Just doing that.
Just tilting the bed. Now, the interesting thing here as well is that if we put an astronaut in space, their immune system plummets.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
All we've done is took gravity away.
Mm-hmm.
So I think gravity is a lot. It's of huge importance. But let me ask your listeners, why are you sleeping on a flatbed? Where did that wisdom come from? Who was the genius that said that the whole human race should be sleeping flat? What were his qualifications? Was he a carpenter? Or was he some brilliant academic, physicist or physiologist or surgeon? The chances are he was a carpenter, so you're actually trusting your health to a carpenter.
Well, I suppose, I don't know, well, long ago, I guess we just slept on the floor till somebody came up with the idea of a bed, I guess, and they just made it flat. I don't know.
Yeah. No. I mean, even, you know, back to your first question you asked about what does the history tell us, there's a lovely photograph of an hospital. Well, it's an actual painting of a hospital ward in ancient Constantinople. Mm-hmm. All of the beds in that ward are all inclined.
I'll be darned. How long ago?
And that hospital was renowned for being the very best for healthcare.
And could you tell by the pictures, was it about the same, Andrew?
Yes,
about the five degrees?
Yeah. Also, there's the use of it in the cholera epidemics. Tuberculosis epidemics.
Really?
Where there's photographic evidence of entire, I think they would call them sanitariums in the old days where people used to go. Yeah. So they have a roof full of beds, all inclined. Hmm. And all occupied by a patient. Now, what was going on there? And why can't I find any information about its usefulness?
Yeah, well, maybe they just never thought much of it. They just knew it worked, and they didn't write about it or talk about it.
I think that's entirely plausible, Patrick.
Yeah, who knows? All right, Andrew, stay right there. Andrew Fletcher, Inclined Bed Therapy. His website is inclinedbedtherapy.com. You can read the fascinating history about how he got into all this and looked at it and some of the testimonials. And so if you'd like to, before we leave Andrew this morning, why don't you join us with a question or a comment, patrick@oneradionetwork.com. And good morning. Here's a short clip with Wayne Blakely, the Living Streams guy. Listen to this.
Everything you eat converts to a fake, F-A-K-E, fake calcium molecule. That's what causes plaque.
Oh, so that's what causes the calcium plaque. Ding up in your arteries.
That's why we have plaque all over our body. That's exactly why.
So if we don't have the proper probes in our small intestines and large,
right,
it produces a fake, which is a form of calcium that goes in the wrong spot.
And we can't absorb it. It's unabsorbable.
Right, but that's how it ends up in the arteries.
Exactly. Body pulls that up as an amino acid, but it's a calcium. It's fake. In other words, everything you eat converts to a fake calcium molecule. When I finished this research, I was dead serious about it. I'm dead serious about this. I could not understand why Americans were alive.
Oh, you mean after seeing the way this works?
How it works. Why a male at 25 years old has enough plaque in their body to have a heart attack.
Wow. And as you know, a lot of the calcium ends up in the brain as well. So these probes are very important, according to research. And Wayne's done a lot of it. Is this one of the major keys to calcification? It appears so. We'll see. Living probiotics. Many to choose from in our store on oneradionetwork.com. I'm going to order a couple of products from Shen Blossom today. Not that what I'm going to do means anything, but just going to let you know I like this coffee, C-O-P-H-I-E. It's really an interesting little drink, and it's just fun, and it actually, to me, it tastes better than coffee. And so I like to have that around. That's kind of fun. So I'm going to order some of that. And also, he has a new product, too, that I'm going to get some of that. I love dinking around with collagen. I just like taking it. And there's a couple that I've been playing with. But he's got one, too, if I can find it here. And it looks really, really good. Where is it? Anyway, so you can go on his website, Shen Blossom, through One Radio Network. Oh, yeah, I'm going to get the Wild Black Sesame Butter. I don't know if you've had this. Wow, this is really fun. You can put on a piece of a toast or something, or figure out a way how to do it, a little cracker or something like that, or just take spoonfuls of it. It's really quite good. I want to get some of the Hoshu Woo as well. And where did I get this product with the collagen, I don't know why I can't find it. Anyway, he does have a product here. It's vitamin C, and it's all vegetarian. For collagen rather than, so if you don't want to do the Great Lakes collagen, you can get that. Oh, here it is. It's called Potency Collagen Vitamin C Formula. So I want to get one of those. Looks like this is kind of fun. It's derived from a combination of fermented seaweeds, which provides the body highly absorbable peptides that the body utilizes to reverse skin aging, build muscle, burn fat, rejuvenate connective tissue. Looks like a great product. A whole food vitamin C. Really cool. So that's on potency ingredients. Look at this. Watercress, Japanese sorrel, shizandra, amla, bitter tangerine, lemon, kumquat, frankincense, bamboo, rosemary, unripened umboshi plums, collagen from fermented seaweeds. Man, this looks really cool. This is on Shen Blossom from OneRadioNetwork.com. Click and order and try some.
From the Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
We're talking with Andrew Fletcher. Andrew is in England, and he's an inclined bed therapy guy and been working with this thing for about 25 years. Did I dream it? Or have you seen a Star Trek episode where they put people in inclined beds to... so they would heal? Had you seen that?
I think that was Babylon 5.
Oh, is the movie?
I think it was Babylon 5.
Oh, see, I didn't see the movies. Maybe I just saw a clip. But is that true, yes, that they did that? They had them inclined when they,
yes,
when they were sick? That's funny.
And they said, we only lay people flat when they die.
Is that what they said in the movie? So, Andrew, you must have been quite interested in... followed some of the work then of Dr. Cowan with this whole heart is not a pump thing, and it's on the same track of what you're talking about, isn't it?
Something's driving the blood.
Sure.
So again, I think if we go back to the last chat we had, I mentioned about the heart, and what we've discovered here is primary circulation. It's the circulation that begins before the heart forms. Think about that for a while. We have a pulsatile blood flow before the heart is formed.
Before it's formed.
In an embryo.
Ah.
So in the case of a chicken's egg, the food sac is in the middle of the egg. The albumen around the outside of the food sac is what forms into a chicken. And the hen has to rotate the egg for the chicken to form evenly. Now, that chicken's using gravity.
It is.
And because the chicken can only be rotated across one axis, if you can imagine the food moving down through the albumen by gravity, and that inducing a return flow, then the egg gets rotated. And we have the beginnings of creating an embryo from an egg, which is incredible.
Yeah, wow.
And in battery farms, they have to rotate eggs. Yeah.
Doesn't Cowan talks a little bit about the difference in the energy with, I guess, the little gooey stuff inside the veins, right? And then that's got a certain charge, and then the blood has a certain charge, and that's one of the reasons why it's coming up the leg and why the heart is not a pump. It's just really a ram pump. It only puts out what it's put in, correct?
Yeah. I have read papers on the size of the heart that would be required to pump the blood around our full network of vessels.
Yeah.
And it doesn't appear to be up to the job. So, there's something else going on there, and I suspect that this primary circulation is of paramount importance to blood flow. Now, I can actually back this up. A long time ago, many moons ago, I met a guy outside a supermarket. The wife was in there doing some shopping, and he had a huge bandage on his foot. I asked him what the problem was, and he told me that he got gangrene and had part of his foot amputated.
Oh.
And he had to go back to have the rest of the foot amputated. because they said there was nothing that they could do. And we all know with gangrene, it can spread further up the leg.
Yeah.
And it was a few months later that the guy got in touch with me and said that his surgeon was shocked because he'd got new clean growth of healthy flesh, where the circulation had been compromised before he tilted the bed. Now, that would be impossible to prove, but I did send you a text document on Skype.
Yeah, I saw it.
And recently, a 90-year-old gentleman has done exactly the same after tilting the bed. Gangrene has improved tremendously.
So then the idea... We know that something's going on with the moving the blood around without the heart. We know that, and there's something going on. So when we incline the bed, then it's just making this system work a little more. Is that what's going on in simple terms?
No, not working a little more, because the heart rate actually decreases by 10 to 12 beats per minute.
Yeah, yeah.
Respiration rate decreases by 4 to 5 breaths per minute.
Huh.
And yet circulation increases and your oxygen sats go up.
Yeah, very interesting.
Which, you know, something else is working here
that is
not strictly to do with the heart. And in fact, we've got the lymphatic system where there is no pump, yet it circulates freely.
Certainly.
And we've got the cerebrospinal fluid, which circulates freely with no pump. And also, there's a flow under the skin in the dermis. So I'll back the dermis up one, because my wife had an allergic reaction to some wallpaper paste and scratched the top of her head with her fingers. And then she developed this huge ring rash around the top of her head.
Wow.
And it gradually, over the course of a day, it worked its way down through her body and out through her fingertips and out through her toes.
Yeah.
And you could see the ring, and it was clearing up behind it as the ring moved down the body. So how does that fit with the circulation of blood? It doesn't.
Yeah. There's some magic going on, brother. You know, there's just magic going on.
Yeah. I mean, it's been an amazing adventure, Patrick. I'm helping people at the moment with spinal cord injury, and we got a guy that's over 20 years post-injury who's been in agony for 20-odd years. And he tilted his bed, and most of the pain's just vanished. And he's been in agony for 20-odd years.
Mm-hmm.
No painkillers can touch the neuropathic pain. He's tilted his bed, and the pain's virtually vanished.
I'll be darned. How do you explain that?
And there's another lady that's also joined in, and she's 39 years post-injury. And she's noticing huge improvements too. So it's following the same pattern. You can find the previous studies on my site under the research tab. Just scroll down for spinal cord injuries, and you can see the case histories there. Now, these people have trusted me. You know, they've looked at what was written, and seen the merit in it, gone for it, and it appears that we're repeating the same results again, which is just, well, I didn't expect it to go any other way, really. But,
yeah, sure.
You know, we need more people with spinal cord injuries to join in. It's a little bit difficult trying to convince people that a couple of blocks of wood under the bed can make a difference.
Sure, I understand.
But, I'm very excited about this new development. I heard your previous guest, Dr. Willis, yeah?
Cole.
And I was talking about diabetes.
Oh, yeah, Dr. Cole, yeah.
Oh, sorry, Dr. Cole.
Yeah.
I was talking about diabetes. Now, on Pohnpei Island, the government there, together with a doctor and help with the hospital, conducted a study with 11 patients with type 2 diabetes, and they tilted the beds, and the results were incredible.
I'll be done.
All the patients' sugar levels were lowered simply by tilting the bed. Now, that's really important. And sugar's dense, so when we tilt the bed, are we shifting that excess sugar down towards the kidneys and into the urine? Or Is it the combination of an increased metabolism at night time? Because we do feel warmer on an incline bed than we do feel on a flat bed. And we don't get the 2 degree drop in temperature that you do on a flat bed, which is around 3:30 in the morning, which is ironically is the time that a lot of people die.
I didn't know. I didn't realize so, it affected the body temperature like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. There's a mouth to mouth graph.
Huh.
Mouth graph, mouth temperature graph,
mm-hmm.
And it's in all of the physiology books, and it shows literally shows a 2 degree drop around 3:30 in the morning.
I'll be done.
Now, that's probably the time the kids wet the bed as well, because if your body temperature drops, you tend to need to go to the toilet. So bed wetting stops again with the bed tilted. And I've had quite a few reports on this. Now, this is huge because a lot of these kids, you know, they can go 5-6 years of age and still having problems.
Sure. Have you seen people work with people that actually try to do this with the little babies, like 2, 3, 6 months old kids?
Yeah, that's funny you should say that.
Does it
Patrick.
Work? Does it work?
My two granddaughters were conceived on an incline bed.
Right.
When full-term pregnancy on an incline bed, and had an uneventful birth. So, and remain on an incline bed.
But the little kids, so, I mean, do they actually build a little bed for them so they're kind of inclined?
Just put blocks of wood under it.
Oh, just same way, yeah.
Or in the case of a cot,
yeah,
or a crib.
A crib.
You know, a couple of books or, well, I was going to say video cassettes, but they don't have those these days.
Yeah.
Yeah, a couple of books or, you know, a couple of little blocks of wood. Just tilt the cot. You know, this is far more important than people realize because, you know, I've looked into sudden infant death syndrome.
Uh-huh.
And I was invited into meet a Dr. Shireen Chandler from the Foundation for Sudden Infant Death. She was a senior research advisor. I was invited to her home in London. Took my experiments, my little bits of tube, and gave her a talk and told her all about the discovery and how it applies to the way the body functions and how it applies to the way the baby's body functions. And I said to her that you know, that this flat bed, even whether you're on your back or on your side, is probably the main cause of sudden infant death syndrome. So tilting the bed could actually save these kids' lives. And she turned around to me and she said, "My God," she said, "I think you've solved it." I said, "What do you mean solved our war to get to the top of a tree?" She said, "No, I think you've solved sudden infant death syndrome." Now, they never had nothing to do with me after that.
Oh, really?
What's going on there?
It's like they ever met, and they never met you.
Yes.
Well, that happens a lot, Andrew, with organizations, you know, they get a whole paradigm all laid out in their mind, you know, kind of like a religion, and it's something that's contrary to it or changes it, or, you know, they don't want to hear it. You know, it's a planet Earth thing. I wouldn't take it personally. Yeah.
Yeah, you're probably right.
it's just a planet Earth thing. Here's an email for you. I've raised my bed and have been sleeping that way for years now. The only challenge is sometimes I wake up and I find myself that the head is no longer near the headboard, but rather my whole body has slipped down the incline, and I'm still benefiting. How can I prevent this from happening?
Now, that's pretty easy because in the past we've used a duvet, which we wrap the duvet around the mattress, tucking it underneath the mattress, and that extra friction stops the slipping, or a blanket that can do the same job. But we've recently purchased a duck down and feathered mattress. They call it mattress topper.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's heavenly. It really is
nice,
heavenly.
Yeah.
So that would be a smart move and would actually eliminate the slipping problem.
Yeah. Here's some more questions. Let's see. I find that I constantly slide down. Oh, here's another one. Good morning. I constantly slide down to the foot and hang over my reclined bed over 2.5 inches. Is there something to do to remain more centered? Huh. So he's a doctor, and he's slipping down too.
Yes. Not for most people. I don't think we slip down much. I think I don't even notice it, to be honest, the slope.
So let's see, for this stock.
And, you know, at the end of the day, if you have to pull yourself back up a little bit, so what?
Yeah. I've got bamboo sheets, too, and they're real soft and silky, and you'd think I would slip over, but I don't. So you're saying that you can do what again for this doctor?
It's a mattress topper.
A mattress
topper. And they've usually got elasticated corners.
Okay.
So they fit on the mattress, yeah? And they go underneath the bottom sheet. And that extra wadding that you get it supplies the extra friction you need so that you don't move around.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Here's another one. Your guest wonderfully explains a little-known fact that water and its action with gravity is what actually holds us upright. The secret is the basis for Ida Roth's Rolfing technique that opens tangled connective tissue so it can more easily transport water efficiently through the system, resulting in a balanced, structured anatomy. It is not our bones that maintains our uprightness, it's water. Whoa. What do you think about that?
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm in agreement.
Ida Roth, have you heard about Roth?
If you take away circulation, we'll all fall on the floor.
Just fall on the floor. Boop. Yeah, you might look at Rothing. You've heard of Ida Roth. And
I haven't.
Yeah, you should check it out. So that's what the idea, according to the, and I know this person, she's a Rother. And you see this water that holds us up and not the bones.
Yes.
Pretty cool, man. Let's see what else we got here.
Yeah, if you think about it, if it was the bones that were holding us up, we could literally stack people up against a wall, you know, right. Even if they're dead.
Right.
But when you've took the life out, you've took the movement out, the circulation and all the changes in pressures, we're just going to fall on the floor.
Yeah.
We're just going to lie flat.
Here's an email from Leslie. Oh, go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, carry on.
Leslie, I do yoga quite often, and part of my routine is standing on my head, and I seem to benefit from it with my complexion and other things and aging with my face not sagging. What does Andrew think about what goes on when we stand on our head?
There used to be Trend Ellenberg, who came up with the idea that the patients would be better off with head down and feet up, especially when they're doing surgery, because it was easier for the surgeons to access the wounds and so it was more for a convenience for the surgeon rather than the patient.
Yeah.
But there's been a big change in the, you know, there's no merits in having the head down and the feet up. And one classic example was my son, who was in the Derriford Hospital, and he'd broken his wrist for the second time. The first time he broke it, he had a plaster cast on for 6 weeks. And when they took the plaster cast off, this was before the bed was tilted, his arm had all gone thin underneath the plaster. So he had quite considerable muscle wastage. You could see the difference between his two arms. He needed physiotherapy to get the arm working again properly, and gradually his muscles returned to how they were before.
Uh-huh.
And a year later, he breaks the same wrist, but this time he does a better job, breaks through two bones, has two metal plates in, has a plaster cast on for 8 weeks, and when the plaster cast was removed, there was no muscle wastage, and he didn't need any physiotherapy. But while he was in the recovery room, at Derriford Hospital, I went down to the recovery room to see him, and his head was down and his feet were up.
Mm-hmm.
So he was tilted exactly as your listeners just written in. And I said, why are you doing that? Why have you got his head down and his feet up? She said, well, if he's sick, then it's to prevent him choking on his own vomit. I said, well, are you considering that you might be making him sick by tilting him upside down? She said, I've never really thought about it. I said, well, I'll tell you what I'll do. If you tilt his bed 5 degrees at the head end, raise it up so the whole bed's tilted, his heart rate will decrease by 10 to 12 beats per minute. His respiration will decrease by 4 to 5 breaths per minute. His circulation will increase and his sats will increase and he'll wake up. She said, well, he won't be waking up for 20 minutes. tilted his bed. He went exactly as I said he would. And the nurse was running around like a lunatic, telling everybody that this could save the NHS a fortune in recovery time, waiting lists, you know, the waiting for patients to get out of surgery, and it would reduce the amount of time they spend in the recovery room.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just a, you know, just one example.
Sure, yeah.
But NASA's paying people to sleep exactly as your listeners just written. And they're paying people $17,000-$18,000 to sleep head down or stay on an inclined bed facing the opposite way with head down and feet up for months on end. Now, they're doing this to mimic what happens to astronauts when they're in space.
Oh.
Because, yeah, microgravity is not this wonderful cushion of air or cushion of nothing that you're floating around in. It's actually quite detrimental to our health. In fact, we age 10 times faster, according to John Vernikos, who was former head of NASA's life sciences, 10 times faster than we do here on Earth. Now, rather than keep sending people up into space, which is expensive, they come up with a new model, which is head down and feet up. And that also induces heart atrophy, muscle atrophy, visual disturbances, and a host of other problems, and accelerating aging, just by tilting the bed the wrong way.
There was a fellow that was on our show. I don't have his name in my consciousness at the moment, Andrew, but his whole theory, and what would he really believe, that we humans, we used to live in the trees, he said, and that during the time of the dinosaurs, we couldn't come down because they would just eat you, you know, so we lived up there. And he said that in that time, we slept in the crook, or, you know what I mean, like the tree, where we would sleep there, where we would almost sleep like in a recliner chair, you know, that we slept that way for a long time. It's interesting. I don't know if that's true, but it seemed kind of fun.
I know you have religious beliefs, and I appreciate that. There was an interesting paper which was written by a Dr. Dean Falk, and she was studying the position of foraminae, which are holes in the skull that allow the vessels to move blood from the brain out to the skin.
Yeah.
And these locations in early hominid, which would have been before we actually, or just on the verge of standing up, you know, if you believe in that.
Uh-huh.
Then what she found was that when we stood up, these holes migrated to the top of the head.
Huh.
Now, that means that our circulation has completely changed. You know, it's been rerouted from the back of the head to the top of the head, and it's gravity that's done that.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes sense to me.
But the interesting thing was that this guy called Michel Cabanac, Professor Michel Cabanac, University of Laval, Quebec, Canada, he did an amazing experiment where he placed a Doppler probe, which gives you the direction of blood flow, where the eye meets the nose, right in the corner. And he showed normal blood flow from the brain out to the skin. Now, he got these patients to go on an exercise cycle and cook themselves a bit with exercise, and then placed the Doppler probe back. Now the blood's flowing from the skin down through the brain against the pressure of the heart.
I'll be done.
So the heart cannot be responsible for all of the circulation, can it?
Moving it back and forth like that? Probably not. No.
No. And that's published. That's published in some really nice journals.
I'll be done.
But I put into Cabanac that the extra exercise and the evaporative heat loss from the scalp was sufficient to change the density of the blood flowing over the scalp. And that denser blood would take the shortcut against the path of least resistance. So if it flowed over a T-junction in a vessels, for example, instead of flowing straight across the junction, it would flow down through the junction. Now, I can actually understand how that would work.
Yeah.
He liked it and said that he would be looking to look into it in the future, but nothing's ever happened, I don't think.
Well, the body knows what it's doing, Andrew. Somehow the body just knows. Does sleeping on inclined bed help the immune system, writes Linda?
Yes, I did mention about the AIDS patients, but yes, without a doubt. And I suspect it's a case of, because we're not having our body temperature dip at night time as we do on a flatbed, the raised body temperature over night time is sufficient to keep a lot of bugs away. Because if we get an infection, our body temperature raises, and we're told that's how the body deals with an infection.
Right.
Is it raises the body temperature to help you fight off the infection.
Here's an email. I use one of those plush foam pillows that have a curved shape to support the base of the neck and to cradle the head. Maybe that helps me not to slip down on the inclined bed. That's the kind of pillow I have. It's kind of like a tube as well, and I just put it on my neck so it can all stay even.
So that would apply pressure at the back of the neck, wouldn't it? Which I probably wouldn't enjoy doing that.
Well, I don't know. I've been doing that forever and it works for me. So I don't know.
Oh, okay.
It's pretty soft. Yeah, it's soft. But it's just the idea that you don't want your head tilted up. You know, you want your spine to be...
Yeah, you're trying to keep the head in line with the spine.
Correct. Right? Yeah, that's what it does. Yeah. But it's a kind of... I had one specially made. I went to some lady who's a, makes stuff, a real tailor, and just had brought her a bunch of organic stuff, and I said, here, make this pillow. Here's how I want you to do it. So I designed my own, yeah. Well, Andrew, yeah. You're fun to talk to. Good for you. Your website is Inclined Bed Therapy. And do you have instructions? Oh, it's not much more than just getting blocks of wood or books, right, to do it 6 inches, and that's the place to start? Just measure six inches?
If you're going to use books,
yeah,
like, thing to do is to use the thick medical books, because they will all need to be rewritten surely.
That's right, that's what I do, those old ones, yeah, the old thick books.
So blocks of wood for the heavier type beds, just have someone saw some blocks of wood. If you've got tubular bed legs, then you can buy some plastic tube from the builder's merchants, the grey soil pipe, which is nice and strong. Cut that to the right length and slip the legs of the bed inside. That looks really neat.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. People have used bricks, cinder blocks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the cheaper the better, really. You know, there's no need whatsoever to buy a new bed. No, mm-hmm. no need whatsoever. Yeah.
And 6 inches is what you want to work with, right, on either side?
Well, there's a chart on my website.
Okay.
It's under frequently asked questions, how high to raise a bed.
Uh-huh.
And it gives all the different bed sizes and tells you how high to raise the bed at the head end.
Oh, I should go there and measure my bed and see if I'm, Oh, I see. Of course, I never read directions, so what's the chances of me doing that? You never know.
I was mentioning about the guy with gangrene, yeah?
Yeah.
And... I almost forgot to mention the post that I'd sent you. It was this 90-year-old guy with gangrene. It's just incredible what's happened to him. Is that the actual skin has changed back to normal color?
I'll be done.
You know, obviously some of the dead tissue has been taken away, but it's all healthy growth now.
Yeah.
So I'm just blown away with it. Well, I mean, to hear this. At the start of the new year,
it's pretty cool.
The latest testimonial.
Can you send me an email with that, so maybe I could copy and paste a little bit of that, if you don't mind?
I sent it to you on Skype as a message.
Yeah, I'm not sure how to do that, but I guess I can find it. Let me see.
Okay, I can send it to you as an email.
Oh, no, I think I can do it. And I'll put some of that in today's show page so people could read that. I'll edit it if it's okay by you.
Yes.
Cool.
The other conditions that it works with is spinal cord injury, Parkinson's disease. We've discussed diabetes. I've seen some amazing results with diabetes. Respiratory problems. Multiple sclerosis. You know, I've worked with all these conditions and seen amazing results. Leg ulcers. It's just unbelievable.
Well, it's an easy enough, and we know it's safe. You know, I haven't died. You haven't died. So we know it's safe.
Yes.
And you could try it, and people could try it for a few months and just see. They'll probably feel some difference. Okay, Andrew, We're going to run. Thanks. It's been fun having you on the show. Let me know if you need something or we can help, and we'll keep in touch with you, Andrew Fletcher. Inclined Bed Therapy.
Thanks, Patrick.
Thank you.
You take care, Mike.
Yes, sir. Bye-bye. Thank you. InclinedBedTherapy.com. He's got a lot of stuff on there. That's cool. All right, kid, I will see you tomorrow. I'm hoping a little sun's going to come out here, but we're going to do Open Phone Friday. I've done a pretty interesting experiment with castor oil and turpentine, and I'll tell you all about it. And I had some very, very good results. Some things have moved. Very interesting. So that'll be tomorrow, Open Phone Friday. See you then. I love you all very much. Thanks for your ongoing support. Really appreciate it. It's an honor to be here and to be able to make a living this way is like the bomb. You know what I mean? I'm very grateful. Very grateful. I love you all.
From the Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.